Welcome in, everybody, to another episode of Podcast on the Brink. And I'm very excited this afternoon to be joined by IU Athletic Director Scott Dolson. Scott, it's been a long time coming. We're really thrilled to have you on the show. Welcome to Podcast on the Brink.
Hey, thanks for having me, Alex. I appreciate it.
So we were chatting a little bit before. There's obviously a lot of things I want to get to in terms of the Mike Woodson hiring and IU basketball and the future. But I do want to start out, you know, you're from Michigan, you know, you grew up in Michigan City. You went to IU, you were a manager, and then you really, from reading your bio, you really never left IU. There's a brief period there where you went and worked somewhere else, but 1989, you know, you start working for the varsity club. You know, when you took that job in 89 at IU, did you envision that you'd still be working at IU at this point in time, all those years later?
You know, I really didn't, Alex. It's funny because when I took the job, there was a couple of people in the department that I knew because I was a basketball manager, like you said. I was around. I worked for Tim Knight, coach's oldest son, for about a year and a half out of school. So I was kind of around, even though I wasn't in the athletic department. But when I got the job, there were a couple of people who said to me, man, if you could just last 2 years, because there have been three people who had this particular job before you, none of them lasted more than 2 years. And so in my mind, I literally thought, okay, I had two goals. Number one, I wanted to make sure somehow I did a good enough job that could last over 2 years. And then secondly, the person who had the job before me had secured a $10,000 gift. And I thought, man, if I could get someone to give $10,000, I've got to at least get that, because the person before me did that, because I never raised money before and didn't know exactly. There wasn't really a training. It was just sort of a hit the ground running, go out and see people, raise money for IU Athletics, and really engage people to connect with IU Athletics. And so my goal was to get that $10,000 gift in the first year, and then to make it longer than 2 years. So I would have never thought I'd still be here 30 years later.
So growing up, were you an IU fan? Was it always like a dream of yours to go to IU? Do you have family that went to IU? I'm just kind of curious, like, your connection to IU growing up and what it was like growing up watching IU basketball in the state.
Yeah, for sure. I grew up a huge IU fan. My grandfather, who I was really, really close with, my grandfather was my mother's father, and his name was Howard Johnson, which is kind of a funny name. After people would always say, you know, are you the Hotel Howard Johnson? And he said, you know, obviously he wasn't, but that was his name. And so he came to IU. He's from Michigan City. He came down to school at IU in the 1930s and could only stay for a year. He loved it. He could only stay for a year because he just couldn't afford to stay financially. And so he went back home and ended up working in Michigan City, ended up moving to Indianapolis at some point, working there. He was the director of Indiana Department of Revenue. That was his job. And so he talked to me about IU since I could remember. And when I was little, he brought up Coach Knight. I remember him saying, you need to watch IU basketball. He loved Coach Knight, and like most people did. And so, you know, I've told the story before, but, you know, I was 9 years old. I was 8 years old in 1975 when we got beat by Kentucky and, you know, the undefeated season. And then to follow the team the following year to win the national championship and go undefeated, you know, for a nine-year-old kid, that was everything. And so I was going to IU. I went to Bob Knight's camps when I was, you know, 10, 11, 12, you know, 3 years in a row. And it was just, there was just no other school for me. And that's really what got me going. Would really be because of my grandfather.
Who was your favorite IU basketball player growing up? I mean, that for a nine-year-old, I think about my son, he's 10. He hasn't obviously seen anything like that in his lifetime, but to, you know, those are really kind of your formative years as a fan. And for you to be able to see 76 as a nine-year-old, that had to be awesome. Who was your favorite player from that team, or who were some of the guys like growing up you really liked to watch?
Yeah, for sure it was Scott May, you know, initially because his name was Scott, my name was Scott, and my friends all knew I loved IU. And, you know, a couple of my friends would always say, call me Scott May, because that's, I always talked about IU basketball. So Scott May and Quinn Buckner, and then that whole 76 team. In fact, I got a call on Friday of last week from Jim Wiskman, who I've always wanted to meet, because he just is a player on the 76 team, graduated in 79, I believe, maybe 78. I think 78. But Jim Wiskman called, and I'm supposed to talk to him again today at 5. We spoke briefly, and we're going to reconnect. But he was on that 76 team, and a guy who really had never been back since I've been around. And he's kind of reconnecting because he played with Woody and wants to really reengage, and which was really neat. So that whole 76 team, I remember reading books about them. And I remember being in our elementary school library, Alex, and there was a book, I think it was called It's Nighttime or something like that. But I would go, when we go down as a class, like in fourth grade, and it was library time, I would go get that book out and look at all the pictures of, I think that chronicled maybe the 75 team. And it was just always in awe. I was just looking at all those pictures of the players and being around Coach Knight and all that. And so for me to have an opportunity to be involved was definitely a dream come true. I just grew up like a lot of kids in the state, just wanted to be a part of IU. Not really even, you know, wanted to play initially, but obviously I wasn't good enough. So, ended up being involved was really a big deal for me.
So how did you get involved when you got to IU in terms of becoming a manager? And what was it like those years working as a manager under Bob Knight?
Yeah, it was great. I really owe it all to Delray Brooks, who, you know, ended up being my best friend in high school. We were like brothers, and he came on his visit. I thought he was going to go to UCLA. I think he thought he was going to go to UCLA. That was his dream school. But he came on a visit here before our senior in high school and really just fell in love with the place and really connected with Coach Knight. He called me from his visit, and I'll never forget it. He called and he said, "Hey, I just committed to play for Coach Knight," and it just blew me away. I couldn't believe it. And he said, "I really think you should consider being a manager." He said, "Steve Alford's roommate's a manager, and managers are involved every day in practice. He said, "We'll room together here at IU, and I'm going to be gone at practice all the time. It'd be great for you to do it. You love IU more than anybody I know." So he told me about it and showed me how to apply. And fortunately, we weren't a package deal. It wasn't that they had to hire me, but it kind of certainly helped big time to have Delray kind of there advocating for me. So that's what really got me involved. And then that experience was incredible. You know, Delray ended up transferring halfway through our sophomore year, transferred to Providence to play for Rick Pitino. And just the irony or the incredible twist of fate where they end up in the Final Four, you know, our junior year. And they got beat by Syracuse, obviously. We're there. We beat UNLV. But, you know, I remember being there in New Orleans and going to visit Delray at the Providence Team Hotel. He roomed with Billy Donovan. And it was just kind of an interesting twist of fate, like I said. And it was just an incredible opportunity. You know, some of my best friends in the world, you know, were formed and still are to this day former players. And I ended up living with Brian Sloan and Jeff Oliphant. And Eric Anderson ended up moving in when Brian left, and because I never left here. And so my former manager brothers are like, I can't tell you, I probably get texts every day from somebody I was a manager with that are close friends who are staying connected. And that's just kind of was my fraternity, I guess you could say. And just really, it gave me a million times more than I ever gave it, let's put it like that. And I just feel very lucky and fortunate to have had an opportunity to be a part of. Very, 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 very small part of the program as a manager.
So fast forwarding kind of to present day, you take over, you know, last summer officially as athletic director. And it's a situation that I don't think any of us could have foreseen ever happening in our lifetimes. I know I didn't ever expect that we would be in the position that we are, but you know, you're taking over in the middle of this pandemic, and there's so many challenges with athletics, and just in, you know, it's obviously been a challenging time, not only for our country, but for the world. What's your mindset going in with kind of all the uncertainty and you've got all these, you know, these budget numbers that I'm sure are a challenge to navigate? How did you, was it just taking it day by day, hour by hour when you first took over the job? And what was that like? Just kind of, you know, it's always a challenge taking over a position like that. But in the circumstances that you were in, I'm guessing it was especially difficult.
Yeah, it definitely is a little different than you expected. Didn't expect those type of challenges. You know, I remember going through the interview process, and when Fred announced he was retiring from athletics, you know, I put together what I felt was really important was that because I'd been here a long time, you can look at that as an advantage, which I certainly, I think was an advantage in terms of I knew kind of what we needed here. I felt and you know, knew the lay of the land, but at the same time, I think it was a disadvantage at times because I felt like that maybe I could be viewed as the number two guy. And Fred Glass, I could talk about him all day in terms of what the opportunity he gave me to be really his right-hand person. And, you know, I learned so much under him. And so I felt like I was really ready for the change, but I felt like what I needed to do is like my mentality was, Alex, that I was the total underdog and I needed to create a vision for athletics like I'd never been here before. And then also present in a way that in my mind, like nobody knew me and to make certain that they would see me as the athletic director. And so, you know, going through the interview process, I definitely had a vision for the department. But then when I ended up ultimately getting the job and taking over, you know, the pandemic and all the challenges that we faced, certainly we had to adapt and move. And really what happens is, and this is kind of the way I've always worked and the way I've always led, is to try to always have a vision for define what success looks like in terms of where are we really trying to get to. If this goes really well, what happens? And so the pandemic, for example, always trying to think about what's the end result we're trying to get to. We're trying to put health and safety first to protect our student athletes. And we want to communicate better than anyone because it is such an uncertain time. And so those are things that were musts. And then, like you said, we work so hard on the day to day that I really have never taken a step back and saying, wow, you know, I wish that hadn't happened. It would a tough time to take over, or there's a lot of challenges. You just really focus so hard on the work every day that you don't really think about that stuff. And so I've never once, like, I just feel extremely fortunate to have this opportunity. And I love the staff we have and the people we work with, and university's been great. And that's not a Pollyannish or I'm not trying to be a cheerleader, but I honestly feel that way. So I think, you know, I said this to our staff one time during a low point, probably in the pandemic when things were really challenging, and someone really a lot smarter than me said that Congressman John Lewis said that we didn't choose this time, the time chose us. And I told our staff that. I said, you know, we didn't choose this time to be in this situation, but the time chose us. So it's incumbent upon us to lead us through it and to do the things that we feel is right. So anyway, it's a long answer. I apologize. But kind of my mindset going into it was really, I've never thought about it negatively. I wish for all the people who have been affected, obviously, you know, my heart goes out to them. It's been challenging financially, you know, health and safety, obviously, number one, and people who've had extremely challenging situations in their families or, you know, hate that we've been through that. But at the same time, we've adapted like everyone else and just tried to carry on, do the best we can.
Last fall, when football was kind of a roller coaster in terms of getting things off the ground, what was that like for you trying to navigate, you know, the health and safety? But it also seemed like from a player perspective and coaches, and you had, I don't know if this was happening at IU, but there was, you know, different schools where players and parents were vocal about wanting to play and wanting to have that opportunity. And obviously I understand the health and safety of it, but what was it like for you trying to balance kind of everything? And you're an advocate obviously for the IU student athletes, but you also are having these conversations with Big Ten athletic directors and trying to figure out what's best for everybody involved.
Yeah, it was a really interesting process to go through. And back to what I said earlier, you know, I was really confident in the entire process because the bottom line is that, you know, I'm not a doctor or a health expert. And so if you really commit to listening to the best medical experts you can, and we've got the best here, and Dr. Rank and Dr. Hipskin and Dr. Hismalis, who is a local infectious disease doctor who helped us, that they were so good that I felt like I didn't feel like a pressure or felt like there were things that were on me. I felt like what was important for me and ultimately for me to lead the department was to trust and lead towards the medical advice and medical judgment. And then really for us to really communicate as effectively as we could to our student athletes, to our coaches, to their parents and beyond. And then ultimately, Alex, what was really beneficial was all those Big Ten athletic director meetings. You know, the Big Ten, and that's what's great about the Big Ten conference, is that the Big Ten felt the same way. You're really trusting the medical advice. And even though the medical advice, what was really tough, Alex, is that, as you know, the medical experts were even, the advice was changing sometimes daily, sometimes weekly. So it wasn't, we're all learning at the same time. So I looked at it as, for a young AD or a new AD, to, you know, I've said I probably have had 30 years worth of athletic director meetings packed in 9 months, because generally athletic directors in the Big Ten would meet maybe three times a year. And, you know, we're meeting every day for 6 months. And so, you know, I forged some great relationships. I learned a lot. You know, Mike Babinski from Purdue is, you know, I've said this before. In fact, I just talked to him about an hour ago to catch up on a couple of things. You know, the collaboration, the support, is incredible in the Big Ten. And I felt like going through the challenging time, the times that we have been through, really, again, I wish we didn't go through those. And I don't take this the wrong way. I don't mean that there's positives that come out of it. But for me, I just learned a lot. And again, just really focused on what, if this goes well, what does this look like in our staff? I could just talk all day long about the great job our staff did in dealing with all the challenges we had.
Did you, in terms of the football season, did you feel overall it had to be viewed as a success, right? I mean, obviously wins and losses, but in terms of the safety and everything that was done from the Big Ten level, you know, I thought it was excellent that, you know, the season was able to be played, and that it did seem like the Big Ten, more than other conferences, and this isn't to throw anybody under the bus, but with the daily testing, it seemed like the Big Ten was a little bit more on top of it than anybody else.
Yeah, I felt like it couldn't have gone better, really, given the cards that we were dealt and playing those the best we could. You know, I think that, again, a credit to the medical experts, to the leadership at the Big Ten. You know, Penn State's athletic director, Sandy Barber, chaired the medical return to play committee. And, you know, Dr. Rink was on that committee from our standpoint, and Kurt Zorn, our faculty athletic rep. And, you know, just to make certain that, again, we were all together in terms of making certain that we would listen to the medical experts and do the best we can, given a situation that we know we couldn't completely control it. And I think it couldn't have gone better for the conference. And then for us, you know, I give Tom Allen so much credit, because not only he did great things on the field, which is what everybody sees, and coaching our players and our student athletes were phenomenal. And really for me and us, more importantly, you know, football just came along at the right time for Hoosier Nation. You know, we needed hope. We needed some excitement. You know, it was during one of the more challenging times, you know, in a long, long, long time in challenging, I mean, just from a whole community standpoint. And so when, you know, Michael Penix scored the touchdown against Penn State, you know, I've said it, you know, you could almost feel, I remember being on the sidelines when the referee was reviewing it, and it was right there. It was really literally within 15 feet of the referee looking at it. And I remember when he signaled, he said, you know, the call will stand on the field. I remember just feeling this Hoosier Nation. Just, I felt everybody, not because, you know, obviously there were only parents in the stands. And I remember going to the locker room, and I think I said to Anthony Thompson, I said, man, I just feel Hoosier Nation just coming together. And, you know, Tom Allen and I talked after that. That was just such a pivotal moment for us, knowing what all we went through just to get to that game. You know, like you were saying, all the starts and stops and ideas and AD meetings and communication. And Tom Allen and I, after every single AD call, I would call Tom Allen on the phone and talk to him about what's going on, and then try to update our other coaches as things as we could with them as well, as we had weekly calls with our head coaches. I mean, just a lot of stuff. And to culminate with that game and that win was really exactly what the doctor ordered, and was a fun way to really move things forward for IU athletics and Hoosier Nation.
So you go from that uplifting football season to a challenging basketball season that, you know, I think a lot of people felt like it started with some hope. There was a strong start there. You look at this roster, there was a lot of positives in terms of players, Trace Jackson Davis, but ultimately, you know, you concluded at the end of the season that the results just warranted that you had to make a change. What was that whole process like for you in terms of just coming to the decision that there was going to need to be a change? And obviously you've talked already about the kind of the philanthropic donation and kind of getting everything good to go behind the scenes with President McRobbie. But, you know, I've been to a lot of road games, and you're pretty much there all the time with IU basketball. And I think one thing people forget is, you know, you grew up a fan of IU basketball. You want this program to succeed as much as anybody, if not more than anybody, because, you know, you love the program. So what was the process like just in coming to the realization that a change had to be made? I'm sure it was something that was very challenging, and to have the kind of the pressure then of making a hire as kind of your first big decision as athletic director. What was that like going through all that?
Yeah, it was definitely challenging in terms of, I really had a great relationship with Archie and just like with all our coaches, but you know, I was there from the beginning and with Fred when we interviewed Archie in San Francisco, and you know, I felt everything I could do to support him and wanted him to be successful and wanted the program, just like you're saying, we all want the same things from the program. And so, you know, it was hopeful. You know, throughout the season, you try to lean towards trying to, you know, I'm a big fixer. How can we fix it? What can I do to help? I'm not a coach. I'm not a micromanager. I'm not a coach. You know, I've been around basketball. I'm not definitely an expert in that. But at the same time, you know, I could see things, you know, where we had gaps and challenges. And ultimately, you know, I could probably overanalyze it, overexplain it. But I felt like the program just had lost so much momentum, in that it felt like we needed a new voice. It just felt, In analyzing it, you know, once the season was over, in my mind, I thought if there wasn't, you know, the buyout issue, would we make a change? And I felt like we would. But the buyout was definitely a roadblock. So ultimately, you know, my recommendation to the president, who, again, I've said before, President Robbie's been incredibly supportive. And I'm not saying that because he's my boss, and obviously he's going to be retiring July 1. And I always preface it when I say something like that, because people will be like, well, you're supposed to say nice things about him, but he's been incredible and really been great for me to work with, and I've enjoyed working with him. But my recommendation to him was that if he would give me the permission to confidentially see if I could raise the money to cover the buyouts, my recommendation would be, if I would do that, that we make the change. But if we couldn't, financially, I couldn't see us justifying spending that kind of money. We just didn't have it, and nor did I think it was appropriate. So, you know, he gave me that blessing, and was we were able to secure the funds to make it happen. And again, the other thing, Alex, and I don't mean to be repetitive, but I did say this, I think maybe in the press conference we made a change, but it's important to me, is that it wasn't a donor-driven decision. The donors, you know, we got incredibly supportive. I grew up in the varsity club and raising money, so there are times people could think, well, you know, big money people were trying to influence this, and they really truly were not at all. And it really was my recommendation. And then when I did secure the gifts, and we secured the gifts, the donors did not, it wasn't a quid pro quo, like, hey, we'll make this gift, but I want to know where we're going to go in search. And that was the beauty of it, that they truly didn't. And that's 100% the truth. I mean, they did not know what was next. They just felt in my pitch to them was that I felt like it was really in our best interest to make this change, not just for athletics, but basketball means so much to the university, to the state, to Hoosier Nation, that I felt like we were at a point we really needed to change direction.
So, you obviously felt, though, the kind of the public perception of the program kind of going in the wrong direction. That had to have something to do with. And people point to, you know, the Rutgers game and booing and all that. I don't know that it was, you know, you can correct me if I'm wrong. To me, it didn't feel like that was like a moment of realization. It seemed like more of a culmination of everything. But I'm just curious, from your perspective, you did feel at least the fan base, Hoosier Nation, kind of losing confidence in kind of what was going on to an extent, right?
Yeah, I'm not naive to know what goes on out there, but at the same time, things can change quickly in that area. And so if I felt like that there was really hope that we can really make drastic changes, you know, I would have not made that recommendation. And so, you know, you do, I've been around long enough to see kind of the emotion that comes into play and ups and downs. But at the same time, the key thing is, it's kind of like what I think, not just my role is, but our role of our senior administration and working with our coaches, is that it's kind of like an iceberg, and you know, fans see the tip of the iceberg and see, and that sometimes can look good and sometimes can look bad. But you know, our jobs are to really go deep down below the surface and know what's going on within the program. And again, there wasn't any, I don't want you to read too much in that, there wasn't any smoking gun or some big, you know, I think the locker room was actually good and we have great kids, and it's a credit to Archie that the program internally was probably better than it might have looked from the outside. But at the same time, there was just something missing that I felt like we needed, and it's just sort of easy to say, and it's maybe not as descriptive as, you know, sometimes it's just the feel, but I felt like we needed a new voice and to create some new momentum. And so that really was ultimately what led to that decision. And you know, again, to Archie's credit, I think this should be evident to people by, you know, there are members of Archie's staff who obviously are members of now of Woody's staff. And you know, I think there's a good foundation there that to build from. And you know, just I was so proud of our student athletes. And, you know, we had several meetings after making the decision on Archie, you know, an immediate Zoom call with the players and talk to them. And then had a couple sidebar meetings after that, and an update meeting after the first week, and had sidebar conversations, text with the players, you know, keeping them, you know, connected and informed as possible, and listening to their feedback, which was great. Their feedback was really helpful in the search, just listening to, you know, what characteristics are important in a coach, what types of things are important to them. And ultimately, really a lot of that feedback that they provided in at the end of the day as part of the search really helped me in guiding through that process to ultimately make the recommendation to hire Coach Winston.
So when, after the decision was made to move on from Archie, I remember the Zoom that we had with you, and you basically told us all, you know, you're not going to hear from me again until I'm ready to announce a new coach. And you weren't lying about that. You know, us in the media, we were putting together our lists, and you, you know, talked about how you were basically locked in your basement for those couple of weeks. Mm-hmm. What were those days like? I mean, were you basically just on the phone all day? Were you reading a lot? I mean, I'm just kind of curious, like from behind the scenes perspective, we didn't hear anything. And I think a lot of people were wondering exactly what was going on. You know, it stretched into, I think, like 2 week period. And some people were wondering what's Scott Dolson doing? So what were you doing, I guess, during that time?
Yeah, that's a great question, because one of the things, you know, we did not use a search firm in that. I should have probably said this in the press conference, because when somebody asked me that question, I think I probably should have said, that doesn't mean I'm anti-search firm. And I think sometimes fans can maybe misunderstand the value of search firms, and we've used them and they've been very, very valuable. And I've got in the industry people that I work with that are tremendous and they can be very helpful, and they tend to save time and can cut through red tape to get to people and to make things happen. So there's a huge value in search firm. But I felt like because of my longtime role here, I guess, in the contacts that I've made in college basketball, I could reach out to confidentially. And then secondly, we have so many former players, former managers, people that are connected, that I felt like we had a real ability to connect on our own to get feedback on potential candidates. And I thought it was important. I just wanted to hear from myself. And maybe I knew it would take a little longer, but again, this isn't knocking a search firm, but instead of maybe, Alex, if you were the search firm, you telling me what people say about this person, or you telling me feedback on this, I was hearing it for myself. So ultimately, to make that recommendation, and what I basically did is, like you said, I worked out of my basement just to kind of sequester down there. And I made a list of names that I thought could be interested, or could be someone we're interested in. And then people had called in on their own, because people have agents who will call in, or people will call in and make suggestions. So let's just say, and the list, you know, kind of varied over the 2 weeks, but say there were 20 names on a list ultimately. And that list of 20 people, let's say some of them were people I was really interested in, and some of them were just people that were just brought up or random. So I would call nonstop, just call people that I'd know and run through those names and say, you know, give me your thoughts on these people totally confidentially. You know, I'd never tell anybody who I talked to or what they said about anybody, but they didn't know who we were really looking. I didn't put them in a bad position either. It wasn't like I called someone and said, here's three names. Let me know what you think of these three. Cause then obviously they would kind of then, when we'd hang up, put them in a tough spot. Cause they're like, well, I know who he's talking about. So if there's a larger group, they really didn't know. And so it was just, it took time, but just over time, you start to really formulate a real feel for people and who would be a fit. And, you know, I'd mentioned this too in the press conference, and not to ramble on this, but, you know, we put together, and when I say we, you know, I worked with a couple of key members, you know, as I mentioned, Stephen Harper on our staff, who's been really huge and this just a huge member of our team, and Becky Panny, who works hard in sport administration, and put together a vision document that I had in my head about where we want the program to go. So it's kind of what I said earlier about, if we know what success looks like, we define success for basketball. This is what the program I felt like needed to be to build on our foundation of success, but to have a vision for the future. So we had that as really the end result we want, and to partner with a head coach that believed in the same things and I felt could lead us there. So as I went through that list of names and talking to people, formulated kind of the short list and interviewed a handful of candidates. And ultimately it was really quite clear that Coach Woodson, he was the fit that I was looking for, we were looking for, that really could partner with us in this vision. And again, talking to all of those people who didn't know exactly who I was thinking about, you know, Coach Woodson by far he's one of the most respected people that I've asked people to comment on. Everybody said he's an incredible person. You know, what a great guy, what a visionary, X and O's wise. There are things I learned about him that he just ended up, you know, being what I felt was the perfect fit at the right time.
How much did the feedback that you got from the players along the way kind of in terms of getting a coach that it seems to me like you see these video clips of Mike Woodson connecting with players, you hear old Knicks players talking about the relationship. And I've said to people, you don't last as long as he did in the NBA if you're not loved by players, right? Because it's a players' league, and if they don't like you, you're going to be out of there. So how much did kind of the feedback from the players kind of wanting someone in terms of relationship that they felt like they could have a really good relationship with the coach, how much did that impact kind of the process in terms of you seeing, you know, that was something that was a strong suit of Mike Woodson and he would be a good fit for that reason?
That was big, Alex. It really was. I mean, it was all part of the kind of analyzing all these different aspects of the qualities of the coach we need. And the players did, you know, one of the things they said is that, you know, having a relationship with the coach is really important, having someone. And they all, they're smart. You know, players are smart. They get it. They get more than people probably give them credit for, but they understand there's a coach-player relationship. They understand it. You know, they weren't saying we wanted a best friend or someone we can go hang out with, but at the same time, someone that they really felt comfortable with. And that doesn't mean, that doesn't knock anything that we, you know, that doesn't knock on Archie or anything we had in the past, but that was something looking forward that they really felt was important. And again, from my first interview with Coach Woodson, you know, he's just, and I knew him from before, just from being a former player around, but didn't know him. I knew him. You know, I was close with Wayne Radford, and Mike Woodson was best friends with Wayne Radford. And so there, you know, I knew him almost more through Wayne Radford than I did just one-on-one relationship with Coach Woodson. But to your question, that was really an important aspect of really that connection, that trust. And you can, it's kind of those things you know when you see it. So Tom Allen, when you see Tom Allen, you know, Tom Allen's he's got all the enthusiasm in the world. He's just so genuine. And so when he came on board, he was talking about LEO and what he stands for and really helping the kids, he really means it. And the kids know it and they feel it. And there's a connection there. And that's really what I felt like in a different way, because certainly Woody's different than Coach Allen, but there's the same genuineness, the same quality of people that I think you have to start with to build from in terms of having a successful coach.
So in terms of, you know, you settle on Mike Woodson, but the interesting part to me, just about how all the news came out, not only do you hire Mike Woodson, Thad Matta is part of the deal too. Is that something that you're kind of working on, obviously simultaneously, because two things come out, and what were those conversations like with both Mike and Thad about that partnership and getting a chance to work together behind the scenes, because it's not often that you see, I mean, you look at Thad Matta's credentials as a head coach, what he did at Ohio State. I mean, since 2000, I mean, he's one of the best to coach in the Big Ten. I'd argue he's right up there with Tom Izzo and some of the other guys. So to me, it was really interesting how that came about. What were those conversations like in the background? And was this something you were kind of, I noticed like when you decided to make the move, it seemed to me like you were very focused on getting not just a great head coach, but a great staff to surround that head coach. So I'm just curious kind of how that worked in the background with being able to have that all set in place when you were ready to make the announcement.
Well, it was part of the, part of the vision for the program is like I said earlier, to partner with the head coach, and not for me as athletic director to pick the staff or to micromanage it, but at the same time, to really work collaboratively together. And one of the things that in my first conversation in depth with Coach Woodson was that he had the same thoughts in terms of, he really explained to me that, he's big at bringing people together, and where he has had the most success. He gave me the example of when Glenn Grunwald was his general manager with the Knicks, he and Glenn. Glenn wasn't a coach, but he really was that huge ally and asset where he could bounce things off of. And that's the way he just talked about surrounding himself with great people. And so, he'd said to me, that's what I kind of need from you, that you and I to talk about it, think about it. So it was really thinking more than just, and one of the things that had been in my mind is with the vision is that it just wanted to make certain we just weren't handing the keys over to a coach, whoever that is, and just sort of, we'll support them, but just take us where we want to go, that we're all in this together. And so, the Thad idea kind of came on my way back for me with Coach Woodson in terms of, Thad, who I gotten to know and it felt like in meeting him and then meeting Woody, their personalities were really close. I mean, kind of selfless leaders, not big ego, just want the same things. And so, I approached Woody to say, would you be interested? I've got an idea, because I couldn't be Glenn Grunwald for Woody, because I'm doing that with Tom Allen and Terry Warren and Jeff Mercer in baseball. And so I knew my role. And plus, I'm not a basketball coach. So I thought of the idea of really approaching Woody and Thad about having Thad really work for me. And it really would fulfill kind of what Woody asked me to do, and to be that non-coach, non-staff, really administrator that helped get us ultimately where we want to go in basketball. And Thad was great, and kind of connecting them, it was a really great fit. And like you said, Thad's one of the most respected coaches in the Big Ten. He's Ohio State's all-time winningest coach. And he's the type of person, most importantly, just like Mike Woodson, that anybody you talk to, he's as quality as you get. And just thought that was a great fit. And then it just kind of went from there. Ultimately, assistant coaches are the head coach's decision. As AD for any sport, I okay those. So Thad works for me. Woody reports to me, but Thad is my liaison to basketball and his house over in Cook Hall and helps on a day-to-day basis with his knowledge of college basketball. It's been a great fit. And then ultimately just sitting down talking to Coach Woodson once we need to hire about Kenya and Dane Fife and then Yasir and really then the staff and Mike Roberts, who subsequently left and went to Cincinnati, but Ben Sander, a behind the scenes person that a lot of people wouldn't know, but I felt was a key member of Archie's team and really is a great go-getter, and Brian Walsh and some of the people we kept that, and then Cliff Marshall, who's done a great job of strength and conditioning. So it was a great blend. And to Woody's credit, because I want to be clear, all those decisions are Woody's decisions. I didn't force him, other than me hiring Thad to work for me. We worked collaboratively on everything else, and I wanted Woody to be comfortable with the staff, but at the same time, no, he's not on an island, and that we're in this together towards this vision of really, building on our foundation, but having a vision for the future for the program.
So obviously things are off to a solid start just in terms of the news. It's been hard for us in the media to keep up with it. It seems like every day there's a commitment or a guy transferring, now that I think that it's all been announced. I mean, Tamar Bates signs with the program. Xavier Johnson's transferring in, Miller Kopp. I mean, these are all impact guys that I think are going to have a chance to really help next season. But I mean, you have to be pleased, I guess, with the start, just in terms of the momentum and the positivity. I think that it's really kind of done a complete turn over the last month.
Yeah, we feel really positive, you know, where we're, you know, the momentum is going in the right direction. And again, not to get too high or too low, but we're focused on the day to day and focused. We believe in the vision for the program, and certainly feel, you know, 100% confident in Coach Woodson and believe in him. And then ultimately that, again, having the staff in place and with Thad and his input. And then again, now that the three assistants, couldn't be more pleased with the feel and the staff, and really the unsung heroes probably to me right now. I just am so appreciative of, you know, I could go through every player from Trace to Race and Rob, you know, older guys and then, you know, young freshmen, everyone kind of hanging together. And it's a time that, as you know, in college basketball, college athletics, you know, the transfer portal, and I don't begrudge anyone who is transferring or has transferred, or, you know, that's part of the world we live in today. And we certainly support that. But at the same time, I really am so appreciative of the current players who, you know, that I love the first meeting we had with Coach Woodson on Sunday night. The press conference was Monday at 10, but Sunday night we had the team together in the locker room. And you know, I appreciate them giving him an opportunity to be open to listen. And that's what I ask for them throughout the process, is just, you know, it's going to take a little time here. I knew it would take, you know, a week to 2 weeks to get it done, and just to be open-minded and don't make any rash decisions. Let's let this settle. And I love the connection, because again, you can feel it. And I've been around a lot, but in the locker room, you know, Woody's a genuine guy. He's wants the same. He wants what's best for the players, ultimately, and for the program. And he just had a ton of experience, but he can relate to the young kids. And that's one of the things, you know, I think people could have said out there, and I didn't read a ton, but, you know, 63 years old, can he relate to this generation of kids? And, you know, again, with all the due diligence I did talking to the NBA, and there's young kids in the NBA as well. And you could see from that Knicks game, you know, he's just got a connection with kids I think is really special. And I think that he can really do some great things, not just for our program, but more importantly for our student athletes who come here. And help them in every aspect. And he believes in all things we believe in, academically, personally, obviously from a basketball standpoint, to get us where we want to go.
One thing I'm sure you'd kind of like to replicate with basketball is in terms of how the program is looked at and perceived with kind of what football's going on. I mean, it seems like everything with football, there, you know, Tom Allen, the positive mentality, everything kind of seems like, you know, to be going well, I guess, in terms of how football presents itself. Are there things that you've talked about internally in terms of kind of changing the perception of IU basketball? You know, I know Dane Fife, when he got on a Zoom with us and talked about 45 minutes a couple weeks ago, and he was talking about kind of going out back into the state and reconnecting with people. And it feels like sometimes that, you know, over the last 20 years when Indiana basketball has had its ups and downs, that's one thing that they've gotten away from. Is that something that you're cognizant of and that you want to do more of, and just in terms of connecting fans to the program?
Yeah, for sure. But the key thing in that, Alex, is that you've got to have a genuine connection inside. And I feel like why football has, and I think, I tell you, our media staff and our Cuban Center staff and Jeremy Gray, and I think they've done a phenomenal job of making certain people get a peek behind the curtain and get to really get a feel for the program. But you have to have that genuine, no matter how good your promotions are, your social media strategies, you really need that momentum internally. You need the feel of the program. And one of the things that, you know, I give Coach Woodson so much credit is we are reestablishing our identity and reestablishing the identity of who we are, what we stand for, what it means to come play here. And again, back to the original vision, which you talked about, is, you know, building on that tradition of success, but not living in it. We have to have a vision for the future, how we're going to play, what it means to play here, that it's an incredible opportunity and it's fun and it's all the good stuff. And so as recruits around the country, what's their vision, or as they view Indiana basketball, what's it mean? What do we stand for? And so then once we get it all situated inside, then you can, through social media, through, we want to get that identity out there and to reestablish that. But it, not to ramble on that, and I apologize because I'm going to ramble on some of these answers, but the I really believe you have to have the foundation built within your program to do the best job you can with talented people who, through social media, really, like we've done with football, like we've done with women's basketball, like we try to do to really make certain people understand who we are and what we're all about. And it's not just for recruits, but recruiting obviously is a big part of it. But, you know, you want fans to get a feel for the program and again, what we stand for. And that's what we're working hard on.
Last question, because I know we're pressed for time here, but you know, I want to ask you, it's kind of a loaded question, one that you may not be able to answer, but the question I get asked most often is what's the next fall and winter going to look like in terms of, you know, the game day experience for IU football? Are fans going to be able to come back for basketball? I'm sure these discussions are already starting to happen at the athletic director level. What can you tell us just in terms of how you're planning, I guess, as you approach fall and winter, because obviously, you know, you've got to get things in line to start selling tickets for next season. I noticed you guys have already started a campaign for that. So how are you, it's still an uncertain time, but I feel like things are trending in a better direction with the virus and vaccinations and all that. So how are you kind of game planning for what IU athletics in terms of basketball and football are going to look like next year for fans?
Yeah, I think first and foremost, we'll continue to follow the medical experts' judgment, their plan. So whether you wear masks at games, what is, are we at 100% attendance? Or are we at 80%? Where are we attendance-wise? So all of those things will be, again, out of my or our control. Ultimately, we'll get the best advice possible working with campus, medical experts, the Monroe County Health Department, all of that, the Big Ten. So those things, as you said, are still in flux, and we'll probably, as every day, we'll know a little more. So having said that, our plan is that we talked about as a staff now for a couple months now is, you know, we're planning to be ready for business as normal. You know, we've got to be ready to be all in, and we're selling tickets just like business as normal, both for football, and we've got our men's basketball ticket application going out, and moving forward on all of that. And then if we have to adapt, we certainly will. But the plan has to be that we've got to be ready to be ready for full scale. We feel like there's a real opportunity. We feel like Hoosier Nation out there, you can kind of feel people are, you know, wanting to get back in it. And that's what we hope, because you hope that people would miss it. You know, you hope that people don't get so used to not coming to games or like, well, I really didn't miss it that much. But I do feel that with football, and certainly now with the momentum and Coach Woodson and what's going on in basketball, I feel like you can, and I don't want to misread that or overestimate, but I feel like there's a real, it's going to be fun to be back in Bloomington again. And so our job is to make certain, whether it's traffic, parking, concessions, you know, sitting in the stands, whatever it is, we can make it as convenient, communicate as best as we possibly can, how it's all going to work, and get everybody ready to get here and have a great, starting with the fall of 21, we're ready to roll for sure.
One follow-up on that, just in terms of how that's led. I mean, you talked about kind of listening to the experts, but will the Big Ten have anything? Do you expect like the Big Ten is going to have guidelines or things like that for the fall? Or do you think it's going to be more left up to institutions to kind of navigate as they choose?
Yeah, I think that'll still be determined. I think the Big Ten certainly will be involved in terms of they'll be, you know, we'll come together as athletic directors and ultimately work through the, you know, Commissioner Warren and then the presidents and chancellors in terms of, you know, what is the conference stance on testing, or is it all up to the locality in terms of attendance and so forth and so on. So there'll be a Big Ten overall umbrella approach to things. And then ultimately, like we are now, continue to work with campus and Monroe County Health Department at the local level to really determine, you know, our protocols. Because there are times that, you know, it could be that the Big Ten Conference says you can do this. This is sort of the maximum you can go to, but at different locations, it might have a different situation. So it might be that some location has less attendance than the other. But certainly all those decisions just haven't been made yet and to be determined, you know, as we get closer to August and what everything looks like. And let's just hope, you know, vaccinations keep going in the direction they're going, and we can keep things under control and get a little better every day. And I know that's what everybody hopes for, But again, we'll know here relatively soon where that's all going to end up. We're planning for the best, but prepare for the, you know, challenges.
Well, Scott, thanks for the time. Really appreciate it. You know, you've been more than generous with us here with your time, and it was fun to kind of cover a lot of ground with you, get learning more about your background as an IU fan. And, you know, IU fans are obviously excited about the future of IU basketball. And thanks again for taking the time to join us. Really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, Alex. And like I've told you, you know, offline, just appreciate what you do. And you know, it just means a lot, particularly, you know, as we go through ups and downs. The one thing I'll say, and I said this, I think, you know, I lost track of time, but it was maybe in one of the press conferences, but I really mean this. Our fans have been incredible. I mean, incredible. And over a long period of time. And through, you know, you talk about through thick and thin, because sometimes our fans get a bad rap that they're maybe too, they want to win too much. And I don't see that. I think our fans are the most patient fans in the country. And I think our fans have been extremely supportive. I think our fans want us to do it the right way. You know, I think our fans are as excited about when a student athlete graduates and does something well off the, out of competition than they do in competition. And I really think that. And I just hope our fans know we really appreciate it, because I do think they've been incredibly supportive during challenging times, and it means a lot to us. So, and thanks to you, Alex, because like I said, you've been great. Appreciate it.
Thanks, everybody, for listening to another episode of Podcast on the Brink, and we'll be back again next week. Thanks again to Scott Dolson. If you enjoy the show, leave us a rating or a review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, and we'll be back again next week with another episode of Podcast on the Brink.